Hello?
Yes, sir, Mr. President.
Anything further to add before I wrap up my appearance before the press?
Nothing that will relate to the press conference. I think you're...
I have nothing to say on this thing then there.
Well, I sent in one memo through Buchanan that I thought you would have addressed the antitrust record of the administration.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, I have that in mind in case they get a chance to.
Well, the only reason for that, of course, is that that's one area we sure as hell ought to be getting some credit and went out, and it doesn't involve this case at all.
Right.
But, on the FBI front...
Well, ITT made its greatest growth during the Kennedy-Johnson administration. Isn't that when it became a giant conglomerate?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, indeed.
In regard to the other thing, FBI, what's the deal?
Well, the FBI sent a letter which is just full of outs. It is not as bad as their original document. Anywhere near as bad. It has one sentence in it which partially contradicts the experts. That's not fair. It's more than partially. It's pretty clearly contradictory in one sentence. But then it goes on to say that we can't conclude anything from this. It's very inconclusive. And they, at the end, give us the biggest opening of all. They say that there are other tests now being conducted which may significantly affect the outcome. And the other tests they're referring to are the ones that our experts asked them to conduct.
Good.
Which we think are going to come out, well...
Right. Good.
There's reason to...
Well, that last sentence, then, is very important.
Oh, sure. Now, what I have advised ITT to do, and I don't know that they'll do it, but I've advised them to have their press conference tomorrow to put their experts out there, and then the Bureau has every reason to conduct the further tests, and...
Well, the point is, though, then ITT puts out tests, but why doesn't... then the Bureau will say, well, now, wait a minute, these are not our tests, or...
Well, the ITT will put out their own tests.
The Tytel test.
The Tytel plus the McCrone tests, and then the...
Well, what about... I thought the Bureau was retaining McCrone. They're not.
Well, yes, that's another development today. As a result of John Ehrlichman's call, McCrone is at 1 o'clock going over to review his findings with the Bureau, and the Bureau has said, well, if you can show us where you've done things that we haven't got the capacity to do, we'll be glad to take those into account as we conduct our further tests. So they're...
Yeah.
What they're doing is leaving the door wide open. Most importantly, the Bureau has leaked a story.
Yeah.
And they've leaked the story saying that their tests are, quote, inconclusive. It says a top FBI sources studied the typed letters of the memo and the paper stack and the mark, as well as the initial D penciled at the top of Mrs. Beard's name. The government sources said the D was an insufficient sample to establish whether or not it was a forgery, and went on to say the general conclusions of their analysis thus far are, quote, inconclusive.
That's
so
good.
What they're doing is setting the stage.
That's good.
And in their letter...
Let IT&T go then. If they will.
I'm strongly urging them to.
Why are they back?
Well, their lawyers say, let's get the final FBI conclusions, and that will be Monday or Tuesday, and then we'll go. My point to them is, damn well better go before those senators get out to Denver. But
get it confused.
Also give a little reassurance to your the one witness who's
client.
So goddamn volatile she can go either way.
Yeah.
But they buy that as of now.
Well, they ought to, just to show, like last week, Dita Beard going out was essential. That's what kept this week from being a disaster.
Oh, exactly.
So right now they ought to put out their own test saying if they have an expert that says it's untrue. Then just confuse the bejesus out of it.
Well, all the Bureau can say if these experts go out there is, well, our test didn't go as far as theirs, so we can't contradict them. And that's we think we're programming that this afternoon.
Good.
Problem we have beyond this, Mr. President, is that Eastland, I think, is playing a partisan game. I finally have persuaded the Justice Department that is so, because yesterday Eastland said, Wednesday, boys, when we're through with Dita Beard, we're going to have a showdown within the committee. I'm going to assert myself, and by Christ, we're not going to have any more hearings.
Yeah.
Today, he said, we're going to continue the hearings after Dita Beard. So,
Christ.
Which means to me that...
Now the others should just start to try to have a showdown then. Scott and the boys ought to really get tough with Eastland. Don't let Eastland play his game. And why in the hell doesn't Mitchell get a hold of Eastland?
I sent one of my... Mitchell
can't, obviously.
Well, he does, sure, and he's got a good relationship, but I don't
know. But Eastland is basically, he's not against us in a sense, but he is a partisan, he's a Democrat.
Well, he voted yesterday, on this equal time repeal. He reversed his vote and he and two other Southerners gave the Democrats the victory in the Senate, 41-39.
What's that?
Straight party vote. Well, that was the suspension of Section 315, the equal time requirement for the presidential election.
So they brought, I didn't notice that. They brought that up again?
Yes, sir. We beat them last year had a lot of Democrats on our side. They brought it up yesterday in the Senate. And
well, now, does that apply for just presidential and not the...
The amendment that lost was the amendment that would have applied it to all federal offices, which the House would never take.
Yeah.
So in the Senate, by defeating the Baker Amendment, which would have applied it to everyone, they now have pretty well assured themselves of being able to get it through the House, unless we can find a maneuver to stop them. But the significant thing to me was that last year, the Baker Amendment passed 71-20 on a bipartisan vote. Yesterday, the Baker Amendment was defeated 41-39 on a straight political party line vote. 41 Democrats, 39 Republicans.
I'll be goddamn.
So they're playing the game. It's a partisan game, and anybody who doesn't think it is...
They know the stakes, don't they?
Damn right they do. I just finished feeding all that to Clausen so that he could start some columns about how...
Yeah.
Obviously partisan the Democrats are.
Now on this equal time thing, do you think somebody's going to ask me about debating then today?
They might, Mr. President, yes.
Well,
they might. That's a question that could be asked of you.
Yeah. I'll just simply say that's premature.
Yeah, I would think you would.
I'm not going to turn it down and out at the moment. I'll just say, well, that's premature. We've got to see what the situation is.
Yeah, I think that's the right position to take. There's no sense building.
Because they're going to have more than one candidate, aren't they? This doesn't limit it to two candidates, does it?
Well, the repeal of Section 315. If you had 315 and you had more than two candidates, then you can't have debates.
Yeah,
that's what's always precluded debates.
Yeah.
If there are by repealing 315, you can have debates no matter how many candidates there are because it's left to the discretion of the networks.
Yeah.
So. They are anticipating more than two candidates, because if you only had two, then 315 would not preclude debates. So the passage of this, what they're really after is free television time. They know you're not going to debate.
Oh, it's the free television, isn't it?
Sure. You see, if you refuse to debate, then both sides are given free time.
Is that what the thing provides?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, well, the bastards are just trying to bail out their money.
They're looking for $5 million of free TV time. And the thing that's wrong about it, of course, is that the Congress set a spending limitation last year on the presidential campaign. This just opens it up. And that's our best argument against it, but...
You can't lick it in the House.
Well...
How about vetoing it?
I wouldn't be a bit averse to vetoing it. I could make a hell of a good argument that last year the Congress set spending limitations. This would, in fact, invalidate them, and it's discriminatory.
Well, that's the thing to do, just play a tough game. They want to do it, we'll veto it and let people squeal a little while, and that's that.
Yeah, and everybody will say to you, well, you can't veto that because people will say you're trying to help yourself politically. Hell, who remembers the tax checkoff now? You can't find anybody.
I suppose on this they'd say that there should be free television time.
Well, they can have free television time if the networks want to give it to all candidates.
I just say they ought to give it to all candidates.
Sure.
We'll find a way. We'll write a hell of a message.
I can handle, this area I know every argument.
Have somebody start getting up a good veto message, okay?
We'll do that, Mr. President.
Because we'd sure get that one sustained, wouldn't we?
Indeed we would.
Well, how do you think we came out on the meanie bit so far?
I think you're just coming out better than I had hoped. You have all
they carried all three networks, according to Haldeman, carried my audio. So
yes, sir.
We got that little pitch. That was the best way to do it, wasn't it?
Beautifully
rather than
done.
To make a speech.
Beautifully done. No, it was just right. I mean, if you couldn't go on prime time, Mr. President, because the issue isn't that big.
I don't know whether it comes across very good just being out there before the cameras on a news reading something to the reporters, but what the hell?
Oh, I think it
probably
does.
Probably
I think people saw that. The interesting thing is that...
It's a tough, strong statement.
Nobody, at least I haven't read all the wires this morning, but nobody has yet taken Meany's side that I can find except Kennedy, who made some half-assed statement.
Yeah.
But Mansfield is on your side. Scott and Ford got out good statements. Javits, right up and down the line, the troops are applauding you and condemning
you. Sure, they get them out, boy, all the way. We've got to keep that. I told Haldeman, now, don't you bother, but I put this to him. I says, now, God damn it, get to work on this and get the statements out.
I've got it. I've got the ball. We got Rumsfeld.
Could I give you two or three other brief things?
Yes, sir.
First, get your people around the country to write some scathing and effective letters to the editors of Time and Newsweek for putting this son of a bitch on the cover.
Mm-hmm.
to the networks. I mean, with regard to their, I believe these things have more effect than others do, but I think they ought to get them, you know, to others about the unfairness of their handling of the busing and so forth and so on, you know, or, you know what I mean, that they're, but what I meant is that the raising hell with the networks thing should start now, Chuck, and not in November.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Oh, I agree.
This is too late. Now, is anybody on top of that?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, call should be made. Raising hell. Letter should be written, you know, getting our top people to talk to them.
When I say we're on top of it, we started this morning on this busing thing, and I hadn't thought of Time and Newsweek, but we sure is.
Time and Newsweek, about, you know, when I say 100, maybe 20. 20 or 30 letters, but letters to the editor saying this is a disgusting damn thing.
It's a disgrace that you would deify.
Proof. Yeah. I mean, a charge is made and no proof. I mean, and just say this is typical of a publication, in the case of Time, of a publication that would be taken in by the Irving hoax.
Yeah,
it would be taken
exactly.
Yes. I'd write something like that.
Well,
have a statement made by that. Have somebody attack Time for having him on the cover. Let Agnew do that, saying, typical of a publication, a great publication, that would have been taken in by the Irving hoax, that they would be taken in by Anderson.
Okay? Well, especially if we're able to do anything in the meantime discrediting it, that'll...
Well, you know, I don't assume anything on that. That'd just be a bonanza. And I'm all for what you're doing, but just assume that... we'd be worse off if you weren't doing it, and whatever happens,
anything we get from it is a gain.
We've done the best we can.
Well,
and Leda Beard will do well, and let's create some doubts about the damn document.
Well, that's right. I have one personality characteristic, which is that I'm just goddamn stubborn.
You want to win the fight.
I want to win this fight.
So exactly the same way. On the other hand, I do know that when we get into these things, that we've got to always keep our balance, remembering the fact that if we don't, that the world isn't going to end.
Well, you want to remember one other thing, Mr. President. I don't know if you've seen the memo that your congressional people sent to you, but they did a mail check on the Hill on this ITT case, and nobody's got any mail. I mean, literally, there has been no mail. The one office had two or three letters.
The major effect from what my own checking done, in a very, which we have other sources, of course, to prepare, is in California. It's rubbed us off there some. You know what I mean? It's San Diego, and our strength there is. I mean, it's just, it's one of those, just little aura they've created. It's unspecious.
I don't think it'll last. I think if somebody had their hand in the till, it would last. It would hurt us. But in the absence of that, Mr. President, this will not last. And in fact, some of the mail that's being received on the Hill is from people saying, what an outrage for the Democrats to be running this kind of a...
If we could just continue to hit smear, that's amazing.
Rusker last week had the best line, which got picked up in Time and Newsweek, and it was that Jack Anderson is the Llewellyn Parsons of the journalism world, and that this is a smear a day Congress. We finally got...
Smear a day.
We finally got that in, and both Time and Newsweek picked it up, so...
Right.
And he keeps saying it, and...
Would you get the word to 100 congressmen and senators on the Republican side to start talking about smear a day?
Yes, sir.
Maybe five will do it. See what I mean?
Well, we write it in everything we send to them.
I know, but just get the whips to pass the word out.
Okay? Well, that's a good idea, yes.
Get the whips. Say, look, could you say smear, and that's, start saying it, start raising hell, have a little fun with these people.
Well, that's what we have to do.
Well, I must say that I think that on the meanie thing, though, we've got that son of a gun, and we're going to keep him right there where it is. Of course, the networks had to run. It was unfortunate that the meanie did this, and he picked this day to the day that had the bad CPI.
Well,
the CPI wasn't all that bad, actually, but, you know, the goddamn networks made it appear as it was the second, you know, the worst thing that ever happened. Yeah, we've had 0.5% many times, as you know.
That's right, exactly.
But the hell with it.
Fitzsimmons called me, and he said, I want to tell you something in the greatest of confidence, Chuck. He said, and he said, you've got a terrible leak in your administration. And I said, I'm sure we got many, Fitz. He said, George Meany knew that CPI was coming out, and that's why he picked the day he picked.
Yeah.
And it's been my suspicion that was the only reason he picked.
Well, who's over there at CPI? Who is it?
BLS?
Yeah, BLS.
The place is still full of Jew, bureaucrat Democrats.
All right.
We put a couple of bad guys in.
I want you to tell Schultz this. Well, nothing we can do about it, I guess. Sure, they're leaking it. They leak it to everybody but us.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We still got more over there.
Yep.
That son of a bitch is gone, I'll tell you. We've got a lot of things you guys are going to go the day after.
I'm going to enjoy. I'd like to be personally present when we get that bastard out of here.
He's going to be out of there.
But sorry
we can't throw Arthur Burns out with him.
Well, yeah, that'd be a pleasure to see them both go. But
everybody tells me Connolly did very well.
They said he just
knocked their brains out.
But he was just incredibly good. He was incredibly good. Yeah. And he'll do well tonight. He'll get some more press out of it tonight.
Yeah, the main thing is we're on the offensive on the issue again.
Well, you know, you've done something else, Mr. President, that you cannot overestimate the importance of this, sir. It is incalculable, the split of the building trades in the AFL-CIO. It's never happened. And we've been talking to them just full time. I've had two people doing nothing but talking to them.
Right.
And they are split with Meany. This can be the most significant political ramification in terms of just hard votes, that he's lost his grip on the building trades. If we'll keep this offensive going, we've got more statements going up today to senators and congressmen. We'll have Rumsfeld on Sunday, and he's well primed, and he watched Connolly, so he got a little bit of that evangelism. I think our fellows, Herb Stein, we've set up some interviews for him. He'll do well with it.
Good.
We just keep our fellows.
Start drumming it a little.
Plugging it hard, because
that's right. That's right.
It's
putting the Democrats on the side of George Meany.
That's right.
Trying to torpedo this thing, and they aren't cooperating with the country.
That's exactly right. The interesting thing, Harris has a poll coming a week from Monday, which shows that the rank and file completely disavow Meany. Now, this was a poll he took before, but he's going to write it in such a way that it will appear to be related to Meany's latest caper, and showing 70% would forego wage increases if they could stabilize prices.
Yeah. That's right.
So Meany just is on. He's just is on the wrong side of this thing.
That's right.
Totally on the wrong side.
What is the right guaranteed by the 14th Amendment? I'm just testing you.
Well, it's equal protection of the laws.
Equal protection of the laws.
The protection to me is the key word, Mr. President, because the way in which I think the courts have interpreted, and it's been a long time since I studied constitutional law, but the way in which the courts...
Well, the point is, racial balance is not a right guaranteed by the 14th Amendment, and busing is not a right guaranteed by the 14th Amendment.
Busing clearly isn't. Busing is a...
How the hell is racial balance?
Well, that's right.
In a school.
That's right.
See, equal protection of the laws.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Fine.
Thank you, Mr. President.